back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Shall I say it? A monster of a show. Nick Redfern joining Gene and Chris, and Nick, of course, is kind of sending me weird vibes for using that phrase, a monster of a show.
Bombarding you with microwaves via my black helicopter.
Yeah. You're going to get some emails on that joke, Gene.
That is not a joke, ladies and gentlemen. I am being perfectly serious. I never joke. That's like the remark from one of the James Bond movies, I never joke with 007.
Right. Well, you got to admit, Gene, Nick is one of our best and most popular guests. And boy, I can tell you, Nick, I have more fun with when I have a book of yours in my hand and get a chance to talk to you later about it. You amaze me, man, that you are able to uncover such just really good stuff. And my hat's off to you. I mean, you're a real inspiration, I think, for aspiring writers out there.
Okay, so we had a question on the table in our last segment, Nick, and that is the one-off event. And we can mention an example being, of course, Flatwoods Monster. The one-off event, do you think it holds a lesser or greater chance of having some value of being true?
Well, I actually do think it stands a greater chance because when something becomes part of popular culture and belief systems develop, sometimes, you know, people get carried away and see things that aren't necessarily there. Or, you know, they expect to see an alien. People expect to see an alien today. Everybody's got that imagery in their head of, like, the large head and the black eyes, you know. So I think something that's totally different and that doesn't go along with what's in popular culture and is never seen again, you know, I actually think there is a good argument to be made that that was genuine because it isn't, you know, part of the run-of-the-mill thing that everybody expects it to be. It's totally off the walls.
That leads me to another question. This one's from Polterwurst, who's a longtime poster at forum.theparacast.com. He says, Nick, what do you think might account for the werewolf myth persisting probably from prehistoric times all the way through the Middle Ages when there was a regular werewolf craze second only to the witch craze? Well into the 1800s, and he also has a little postscript here. He says that, Nick and Chris, I recently found a strange sentence while Googling the term Wendigo, and the sentence is, the creature could only be seen if it faced the witness head-on because it was so thin that it could not be seen from the side. And he says this reminds me a lot of Chris's description, my description of beings that looked like they were two-dimensional, which I've described on the show before. Do you have any more stories or reports with that two-dimensional and, I guess, high strange aspect?
Well, actually, I do have one. I don't talk about this in the book, but I do talk about in that book I mentioned just now, Wild Man, where a friend of mine, John Downes, who's one of Britain's most well-known cryptozoologists, he had an experience with, like, a classic British Bigfoot, for want of a better term, in 2003 in an area of woodland called Bolam Lake in the north of England. And what was interesting is that John said from the side it looked like a classic Bigfoot, like a large lumbering thing charging through the woods. But as it ran, it wasn't even two dimensions, it was one dimension, it was like a shadow. There was just literally no substance, almost like something was, you know, projected onto the trees and, you know, the shadow was picked up on the trees. But he said it was just like a solid black form, but it literally had no depth to it. It was almost like imagine a shadow running along where you could see the shadow on both sides, but it was totally one-dimensional, like a plank of thin wood or paper or whatever.
Well, we have a couple of questions that are very similar. One is, again, from Polterwurst, and the other is from our former moderator, Angel of Lauren, who calls himself our friendly skeptic. Polterwurst wants to know if you have a favorite monster, and Angela wants to know what your favorite topic is that you've covered. Which one is your favorite?
Well, I would have to say my favorite monster is probably a pretty obscure one. It's known as the Houston Batman. And it kind of sounds like Owlman, which it actually is. But this was Mothman, I mean. Owlman's a similar creature in England. But the Mothman sightings, which affected the town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, occurred in the mid-60s and came to their height in 1967, Well, 15 years before, in the city of Houston, Texas, there was a report that made the newspapers of a creature that became known as the Houston Batman. And it was seen by several people late one night, and it was described as like a large man-like creature that was seen sort of stooped in a large tree. And it had like a humanoid shape and glowing eyes and these large wings. And the witnesses were sort of terrified by the sight of it, and it sort of just rose up into the air, kind of like a helicopter would, you know, not by a furious beating of wings. And that's how actually a lot of people have described Mothman. You know, it kind of rises into the air vertically. But the Houston Batman one fascinates me. I mean, I live in Dallas, Texas, so Houston's not that far away. And I've done a number of investigations into it. And there are actually a few reports that post-date 1952. The most recent one out from the city was uncovered by a friend and colleague of mine, Ken Gerhard. And Ken uncovered a case where this sort of winged humanoid creature was seen lurking on the top of a building in Houston in the late 1990s. And the best way I can describe it, it kind of sounds just like the creature out of the Jeepers Creepers movies. You know, this sort of ominous-looking, dark, shadowy creature that, you know, surfaces from time to time. And that's sort of a fascinating one for me because it's little known and sort of little investigated as well. And so I might have to do a bit more into that one. And what was the other part of the question?
Your favorite topic within the subject matter?
Oh, well, without doubt, cryptozoology. Of all the stuff I investigate, cryptozoology is my biggest interest and sort of the subgroup within cryptozoology would probably be one of two things, either the British Bigfoot stuff or the Puerto Rican Chupacabra, which I've been on a number of investigations and expeditions looking for the Chupacabra. And although in terms of media coverage, even within paranormal media, you know, it's certainly not at the height it was in the 1990s, you know, I still like to get back there and you know, do a few investigations because I like Puerto Rico. It's like a cool place. You know, you can sort of go out and do an Chupacabra investigation and go back to San Juan and drink cold beer all night, you know. So it's a cool place.
Right. I always have to wonder here, of course, that if you do that and drink the cold beer, does that color your perception of what you're seeing?
No, I mean, you get this sometimes where the skeptics say, well, he saw Bigfoot after, you know, drinking six pints of beer. Well, you think about it. Why would drinking beer make you hallucinate seeing Bigfoot? It wouldn't. You know, when skeptics say that sort of thing, it's ridiculous. It's like, oh, well, if he drank six pints of beer and hallucinated seeing, I don't know, the Statue of Liberty walking down Times Square or something. No, beer doesn't do that to you, and it's ridiculous when the skeptics say, want to know how much you've drunk before a sighting. Because alcohol doesn't cause you to hallucinate monsters.
I like a few definitions here for listeners. We have classified documents on bizarre creatures and extraordinary animals. So what constitutes a bizarre creature as opposed to an extraordinary animal?
The book is actually sort of split into, not so much 50-50, but probably 80-20. Probably 80% of the stuff is what I would call bizarre creatures, like sea serpents, lake monsters, Bigfoot, the Yeti, things like that. Now, there are several chapters on what I would call extraordinary animals. One classic one involves a CIA project from the 1960s that was codenamed Acoustic Kitty, which was the real name of the project. It basically involved CIA scientists trying to turn cats into like living robots, kind of like a robo-cat, something along those lines. And the idea was to insert like antenna and radio listening devices into the body and tails of cats. And the plan was to release them in the direct vicinity of the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C. Bear in mind, this was like 1966, 67. And try and have the cats wander around the embassy and the grounds. And, you know, if any Russian personnel were walking by at the time, and the cat could pick up the conversation, and then it could be broadcast back, you know, to the guys in the van outside the embassy listening on headphones, they might get some snippets of important conversations.
Yeah, this story has a tragic ending.
Yeah, and so the program went ahead, and several cats we know were sort of modified, you know, it's almost like the $6 million cat or something like that.
We have to do the $6 million break before we find out about the cats. Or the cats in the cradle, depending on how it goes. Nick Redfern joins Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and floating phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Can Heart and Body Extract help with other ailments besides heart conditions, high blood pressure, clogged arteries, or unbalanced cholesterol? It did for Karen.
I've been using Heart and Body Extract for approximately 2 weeks. I've had an earwax buildup problem for many years, with over-the-counter stuff not working at all. I have very poor hearing due to this earwax buildup. Well, after 2 weeks of taking Heart and Body Extract, my earwax buildup almost completely cleared up. Could this be the effect of better body circulation?
Heart and Body Extract is an effective 100% organic nutritional supplement specially formulated to allow your body to heal itself.
My hearing is almost completely back to normal. I'm amazed.
Order by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
That is not Chris O'Brien trying to become a Dalek. And there's no truth to the rumor that the 12th Doctor will be Nick Redfern, for those who are fans of Doctor Who. Okay, so we're talking about this cat story.
Yeah, and we know that several sort of operations and procedures were done to sort of turn these cats into robot listening devices. And the very first occasion when one was sort of going to be taken out into the field, so to speak, the team loaded the cat into the back of a van and parked as near as they could to the Russian embassy without attracting any attention. and opened the back doors and, you know, tried to encourage the cats across the road and, you know, climb over the wall or whatever and, you know, just listening on conversations. But unfortunately, as they let the cat out of the back of the van and he crossed the road, or she crossed the road, he got hit by a taxi, and so Acoustic Kitty became Splattered Kitty. And,
that
was the end of the project.
Oh.
And the project was actually shelved because it was seen as one of these bizarre programs that was just destined never to really work, I guess.
Your tax dollars at work and play.
I think actually the kitty's still alive. It's been hanging out outside my home.
So that's one example of an extraordinary animal. And another one I talk about in the book is a project that actually had more success but was ultimately also shelved. This relates to the 1950s, 1952-53, when the U.S. Army secretly initiated like a small project to determine if dogs, cats, and even pigeons possessed extrasensory perception, ESP. And the idea was to, if they did possess ESP, could it be used to train the animals to find landmines buried on battlefields? That's to say, you know, if American troops went into battle, there were concerns that the enemy had laid down minefields in the area. They would let the dogs, the cats, and the pigeons loose, and they could psychically use their powers of the mind to determine where the landmines were. And this was a project which was heavily funded and went on for about 18 months in total. And I was able to get the files on this through the Freedom of Information Act. And they talk about how two German shepherds in particular, their names are Tessie and Binny, they had a great deal of success in finding landmines where the military had even gone to great extents and great lengths to mask the odor of the landmines. So they couldn't be blamed on, you know, using the power of a dog's nose to find them. And they did all sorts of, the military did all sorts of tricks to, you know, prevent the dogs finding them under normal conditions. And yet time and again, you know, they'd be taken to a stretch of beach after the landmines, in some cases, being buried like 6 to 8 feet down even. These are dummy ones, by the way. And each time they found them. But the problem was, on occasion, you know, the dogs would hit the beaches and they'd just want to run and play. You know, they couldn't be controlled. And so the program was actually eventually shut down, not because there wasn't a significant amount of success, but because the dogs got sometimes too overexcited, and so it was unpredictable. You know, the success, they couldn't understand how and why it worked, but they were sure that it did work, but the dogs couldn't be, you know, they didn't follow orders like troops would, you know, they were their own masters, so to speak, and it was seen as a bit too hazardous and unpredictable, so it was all just closed down, but everybody on the project agreed that they really had some good successes, you know, in terms of using ESP.
It was dogs being dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Dogs are being dogs, sometimes at play and sometimes at work. But unfortunately, the military wanted them always at work. So.
That doesn't work at all.
Dogs like to play. And if, particularly if you're going to take dogs to a beach, you know, they're going to see the beach, the sand, and the water, and they're going to want to, you know, just have a good time. So.
I never thought my dog being used for any real purpose other than having fun.
Oh, but he's so cute, Gene.
That's true. And he likes everybody. You know, I don't want to make the dog feel jaded about what the world is really like. Now, expanding on your stuff, we touched upon this in a previous segment, but how far did you expand things beyond the USA?
One of the things I found was British government files on what are known as ABCs, or alien big cats. And this is a phenomenon that is heavily reported across Britain, where every year people see what sound like large black cats, you know, like huge black leopards. And there shouldn't be anything like that running wild in Britain. You know, there are no large indigenous cats anywhere in the UK, or there shouldn't be. The largest cat that beyond a domestic house cat is called the Scottish Wildcat. And it sounds kind of impressive, but it's actually barely any bigger than a normal cat. But it actually is quite ferocious, and they will attack people. But, you know, they're just regular-sized cats for the most part. But people see, you know, things from the size of, like, mountain lions roaming the UK. And, again, using Freedom of Information regulations in the UK, I got hold of a lot of reports where police forces around the UK had actually got a lot of files and records on file concerning sightings of these large cats. And on a number of cases, the force helicopters have been sent out with like night scope equipment and heat seeking equipment to look for these cats. So the reports are taken very, very seriously. Now, to date at least, you know, nobody's been killed by one of these cats. They seem fairly happy to sort of stay in the background and just live on, you know, animals in the wild. But I think there's probably some government concern that if one of these things was ever caught or killed, you know, hysteria would break out and particularly the tabloid media would start talking about killer beasts being on the loose and whatever. So it's clear from the files that I don't think the government has... Well, I say that I don't think the government has proof of that these cats exist. There are rumours that the military and the government have shot several of these cats and hidden the evidence because they don't want to provoke hysteria and concern. But that is clear from the files that they do play down the presence of these big cats in Britain because of the fear, you know, of things spiralling out of control, etc. That's an interesting area. And I also cover a number of other nations in the book, one being Australia. This in relation to a creature known as the thylacine. The thylacine was a real animal that became, or supposedly became, extinct in the mid-1930s. And it was a marsupial, that's to say, like a kangaroo. It carries its young in a pouch. But it looked like a cross between a German shepherd, a coyote, and a tiger. It had these large stripes down its body. And it could actually open its jaws like a snake can, you know, almost like dislocate its jaws to have them almost like running 180 degrees parallel to each other. I, again, through Freedom of Information, got hold of files showing how various arms of the Australian wildlife agencies had actually been monitoring reports of the thylacine and sightings right up to the present day. You know, it makes a sort of fascinating reading. These weren't so much classified and secret files, but there were just records where dossiers had been put together. And over the years, you know, they paint this fascinating picture of this creature that pretty much everybody says there's no way it can still exist. The Australian government files seem to suggest it really does exist. And I mention this for a couple of reasons. One, because it's an official government file on a creature that's presumably extinct. But also, it demonstrates that creatures that we're told are extinct, in some cases, quite large animals may not be quite extinct after all, you know, and that could apply to things like sea serpents and lake monsters that have been attributed to things like plesiosaurs, you know, maybe against all the odds, relic populations have survived, you know, over millions of years.
That might be the big story right there, the fact that science doesn't admit that things they call extinct are not extinct. We can get extinct right now if I don't do this. We have Nick Redfern. The book is Monster Files. You're with Gene and with Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
The government's Department of Homeland Security is buying up loads of ammo. At the same time, they're restricting civilians' rights to own and purchase firearms. Can you put two and two together? Infidel body armor can stop every round, including hollow points and 308 sniper rounds, is reasonably priced and fully legal. But for how long? Go to InfidelBodyArmor.com, spelled I-N-F-I-D-E-L, BodyArmor.com. Infidel Body Armor. Just won't quit.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Being prepared against possible food shortages and economic collapse is not complicated. Just remember two words, disaster, stuff. Add .com after those two words and you've got just one site for all your preparedness needs. DisasterStuff.com prepares your family against food shortages with Linden Farms freeze-dried foods in buckets or Gourmet Reserves freeze-dried food in number 10 cans, both with free shipping. Purify and rid your water of contaminants with a Big Berkey or other Berkey system and get free shipping plus a water level spigot or fluoride filter at cost, and protect your radios and other electronics from EMPs with our EMP Faraday bags starting at just $5.90. When the food shortages and economic instability happens, be ready with all your stuff from DisasterStuff.com. Just remember two words, DisasterStuff.com. Freedom through self-reliance and personal responsibility.
Springtime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's spring specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fam and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
What was that, your Bigfoot bumper?
I thought that was his Dalek bumper. He wants to sound more like a Dalek. Exterminate! I can't do it.
That was kind of like me being possessed and doing some weird, I don't know, a cult ritual, maybe something like that. I don't know.
Nick Redfern is not a Dalek, ladies and gentlemen.
It was actually a little bit of my Lemmy impression as well. Lemmy from Motorhead, for people who don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, blame it on Lemmy.
It's all his fault.
It's the Ice of Spades.
Exactly, the Ice of Spades, that's right. Yeah.
I couldn't resist.
Okay, does the Pentagon have the body of Bigfoot on ice?
Well, I mean, again, this sort of relates to the Mount St. Helens story and one other one I have in the book, where this goes back to the early 1960s, where...
Right, the Minnesota Iceman.
Yeah, well, the Minnesota Iceman, that's a similar case where reportedly a body of one of these creatures has been found. And the story as it relates to Mount St. Helens and this 1960s case I talk about is supposedly the military got their hands on one of these creatures, and very weirdly it talks about how it appeared to be like just an unknown ape-like animal, but it had 32 teeth like a human. And very bizarrely, the story is that it had some sort of weird metallic device implanted or inserted under its skin. I think it was the left forearm or the right forearm. There was speculation, was it a tracking device or some sort of bugging device? And if it was, who on earth or off it, you know, put it there? But it's a very weird story. It was given to me by one guy who got the story from his grandfather who served in the military. So, you know, it was a little bit of a friend of a friend story. But, he went on the record with his real name and his grandfather's real name. But it's one of these stories for which nothing official has ever surfaced. And, you know, and I note that in the book. I point that out, the fact that, you know, it's one of these cases where it's take it or leave it. But, you know, I often, with the witness's permission, publish these because when you reach a stumbling block and you've got no documentation, sometimes just relating the bare facts brings forward other people who say, well, you know, I knew something about that, and then that can potentially open another door. So that's why I included it. But, you know, it's a bizarre story when it goes from the military investigating or autopsying what seems to be a gorilla, and then, or an unknown type of gorilla or ape, and then they suddenly stumble across this weird device implanted in its arm.
And it wasn't done by one of our military.
Well, no, I mean, the story was that the reason why the Bigfoot was dead was because it was reportedly shot outside of the NASA installation, outside the boundaries. And the reason it was shot was because, reportedly, there were weird lights seen hovering over the woods the previous night, and one of the guards got panicky and shot into the heart of the woods where he could see these big shadowy things moving, and reportedly killed the creature. So not only do you have this creature with this thing in its arm, but it's the sighting of it and the exact location tied in with these weird, like, basketball-sized lights hovering over the surrounding woods as well.
From the Yikes Department.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The Bureau of Yikes.
Yeah. Was that outside of Redstone?
It was a NASA installation in Ohio. I forget the name of it.
Oh, in Ohio, okay.
Yeah, but it was in Ohio, yeah. And it was sort of 1962 or 1963, I think it was.
Well, kind of during that same time period, a little later, you have the infamous Minnesota Iceman. Now, you came up with some interesting new information about that I was unaware of. Why don't you give us a quick thumbnail sketch of this particular case? It's pretty interesting. Ivan Sanderson, the famed, almost legendary cryptozoologist, evidently had some time to examine this thing in as it was encased in this block of ice. Why don't you give us a thumbnail sketch?
Well, yeah, the story of the Minnesota Iceman goes back to the mid-1960s, and a guy named Frank Hansen. He was somebody who, he was an ex businessman who would put things, strange-looking things on display at, like, state fairs, you know, sort of like a latter-day equivalent of things like freak shows, that sort of thing. Hansen had this ape-like or semi-human primitive-looking creature encased in a block of ice that he would put on display that became known as the Minnesota Iceman, because one of the theories was that it was shot dead in Minnesota. But the other story was that it was a primitive humanoid ape-like creature shot and killed by U.S. forces in the Vietnam War and then smuggled back to the U.S. in a body bag and actually handed over to an anonymous millionaire who had apparently arranged or knew the creatures lived over there and arranged for to be brought back to him. Now, there's a lot of debate as to whether or not what Frank Hansen had on display was a real creature, or was it a sophisticated mock-up like a dummy? Or there's a second theory that the original creature that Hansen had on display was the genuine article, but then it was returned to this anonymous millionaire, and Hansen wanted to continue promoting it and earning money, so he had a dummy model made to the same specifications and put that on display. Now, whatever the answer is, we know that the latter version was a dummy, and it's actually on display now at a place called the Museum of the Weird, which is in Austin, Texas. You can go down there and see the one that Hansen put on display for like the last 20 years, but the first 10 years is the one that sort of interests us more. Now, there was a lot of talk at the time that it was a primitive human, not an unknown ape, and this rumor got back to the FBI, and because the FBI heard a rumor that not only was the Minnesota Iceman potentially a primitive human, but had been shot, then the whole issue of the legislation surrounding, well, does that mean it was a murder? That sort of cropped up. And what happened was that a representative of the FBI, a local special agent who was local to the area where Hansen was living at the time, actually turned up on his doorstep and said, you know, I want to see this creature, the Minnesota Iceman. We've heard it could be a human-type creature, that it could have been killed as a result of murder. And so Hansen was a bit concerned and agreed, obviously, to show it to the FBI. And but he said, well, you know, I think he's just an ape. And he looked at it and said, well, yeah, it looks like an ape, and whatever type of ape it is, it's still an ape. So the guy sort of left a bit bemused, I'm sure, on the sort of work the FBI was usually involved in. But Frank Hansen, never one to sort of miss up an opportunity to promote his product, built this big sign and painted on it something along the lines of the Minnesota Iceman investigated by the FBI, which I'm sure probably didn't please the FBI too much, but he stood it next to the display every time it was shown. So, again, it shows like a bizarre aspect of how the government has got involved in cryptozoology.
Well, speaking of Vietnam, the story I heard is that the creature was shot by troops during the Vietnam War. I think you mentioned also near Da Nang, isn't there a river where some of our personnel over there during the war saw these huge giant snakes or something, if I remember correctly?
This is a story I talk about in the book. Again, it's a document I actually stumbled upon while not actually looking for anything along these lines. And it talks about a place called the Han River in Vietnam, which during the Vietnam War was a very strategic place. Nearby there was South Vietnam bases, you know, which were friendly to the US, and military personnel from the US were stationed there. The documents talk about how on one occasion, or actually two, because there's like a reference to like a memory of a similar sighting occurring about 4 or 5 years previous. But this was sort of the mid to late 60s when the crew of a helicopter were flying over the Han River, and as they were sort of taken to the skies, they reported seeing this large snake-like creature swimming below the surface of the water. Now, had it been dark in color, they wouldn't even have seen it, but it was reportedly like a bright yellow color and was sort of clearly visible, and they could tell it wasn't, you know, like a log or a weird colored tree or anything like this. It was extensively long, and they could also reported seeing what looked like four flippers, bright yellow flippers, coming from the side, the body of the creature. And that sort of was the key point that, you know, led them to believe that what they were looking at was a large animate creature, like a lake monster or a sea serpent. And they prepared a report on it and filed a report, and the document talks about how everybody was interviewed and debriefed. But it was actually viewed as like an amusing little event, as an aside, you know, just a talking point, I guess, in the after work or whatever. Nothing was really done with it other than, it was filed away because, you know, the troops were fighting the Vietnam War, fighting the North Vietnamese, and the sighting of a sea serpent might have been interesting, but they had better and more important things to do. So it was just a case with this one, it was filed away and just, you know, vanished into obscurity.
Before we vanish into obscurity. He likes that. We have Nick Redfern joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio. Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So, a natural disaster strikes, and out goes your power. You risk losing stored food in electric freezers and refrigerators. Your options: lose all that expensive food and medication, fire up a noisy gasoline-powered generator, or switch now to a propane or natural gas-powered refrigerator from Ben's Discount Supply. Ben'sDiscountSupply.com has a complete line of propane-powered refrigerators. Freezers in sizes ranging from a small camper cooler size up to a whopping 21 cubic foot refrigerator freezer or a 22 cubic foot deep freezer. In stock and ready to ship anywhere. Ben'sDiscountSupply.com also stocks a full line of solar-powered appliances to get you completely off the grid. Check out Ben'sDiscountSupply.com or call 800-771-7702. That's 800-771-7702. Or click bensdiscountsupply.com for camping, home, or bug out location. Bank on bensdiscountsupply.com.
Your home alarm works after an intruder is inside your home, but real home security begins before intruders enter. Burglaries and home invasions are at an all-time high, and crime is skyrocketing in rural and suburban areas. 85% of break-ins are through a door, and police response is often greater than 20 minutes. You can't afford to wait that long. Stop burglars with police-tested and recommended Easy Armor from Armor Concepts. Easy Armor keeps intruders out. It's barely visible and installs easily. Easy Armor reinforces a door's weak points, comes in three colors, and is guaranteed to stop kick-ins. Get Easy Armor now and get peace of mind. Order by calling 888-58-ARMOR. That's 888-582-7667. Or go to easyarmor.net. Spelled EZARMOR.net. Special offer only available to GCN listeners. Ask about it when you call for your Easy Armor today from Armored Concepts. Ultimate door security made easy.
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs has learned the importance of good fats for good health. Good fats are essential fatty acids, and they're called essential because they're necessary for good health. That's why he uses Ultimate EFAs from Youngevity.
Among the fats, the most powerful are two fats that are referred to as essential fatty acids. Now, nothing in the world of nutrition is more important than essential fatty acids. The word essential means you better get it in your diet or you're in big trouble. Essential fatty acids are perhaps the most multifunctional and versatile of all the essential nutrients. Essential fatty acids are not just important for the heart, they're important for everything in the body.
To get the essential fatty acids that are so important to your body, order Ultimate EFAs from Youngevity by calling 866-735-2470. That's 866-735-2470. Or on the web at brightsidebend.com. That's brightsidebend.com. Order today.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
Nick Redfern, author of Monster Files, joining Gene and Chris in the Paracast. There's so many thousands of questions we can get to. I'm going to go catch as catch can with a few others here. And that is, the U.S. government, any suggestions, ideas, what they might know that we ought to get our hands on?
For me, I'm fascinated by the fact that they're fascinated with Bigfoot. You know, we get a lot of reports of military interest in Bigfoot cases. I mean, I have a whole chapter in the book concerning a well-respected researcher named Stan Gordon, who's been in the field for many decades.
And we should mention to our listeners, he's been on the show a number of times.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, cool. Stan's done an excellent book called Silent Invasion, which deals with a Bigfoot wave in Pennsylvania, where Stan lives, in the early 70s, 73 to 74. And at the height of Stan's inquiries, he got a lot of reports suggesting local military and government involvement and interest in these cases. And Stan himself was visited by two government representatives who said, you know, keep us informed. It wasn't like a sinister man in black visit or a threat. It was just, hey, you know, if you uncover anything interesting, just keep us informed. We're looking into this. But he also uncovered cases where military personnel had visited witnesses to Bigfoot and shown them, again, not like Men in Black stuff, but they'd actually shown them photographs that the military had on file of Bigfoot and said, did this look like anything that you saw? And what's interesting is that all the cases that Stan found where the military had taken an interest in Bigfoot, they were all associated with other phenomena as well, like strange lights in the sky, like people going into trances even when the creatures appeared and these animals vanishing again in like flashes of light. So it was, in other words, the military was taking an interest in eyewitnesses where there seemed to be suggestions that Bigfoot was more than just an unknown ape roaming the United States. So for me, you know, that would be the one thing I would sort of really like to uncover is what has prompted the investigations of the government into Bigfoot. And what have they found, possibly suggesting it is more than just, you know, a U.S. equivalent of a Congo gorilla or whatever?
Of course, getting anything out of the government right now in this particular climate must be near impossible.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why a lot of the stuff I uncover is historical, because, you know, the older material is more likely to be officially declassified. And that is the case, you know, in today's world. You know, the legislation over determining what can be declassified and what can't be declassified. You know, the files are scrutinized for a far greater time period to ensure nothing that affects national security is released. But, you know, these older files from the 40s and 50s, you know, there's less concern about those because it's a long gone era. The people involved are long gone as well. And, you know, more often than not, it's a very fascinating file, but it's, you know, it could be relatively obscure as well, sort of like the Tom Slick stuff, you know.
You wonder what you can find there about UFOs and such. But the other question is here, with current stuff that's supposedly secret leaking like a sieve, how do they keep stuff secret for four, five, six decades?
Well, I mean, with the Freedom of Information Act, you know, there's legislation that allows for continuing withholding of files. The Freedom of Information Act isn't a tool that opens all doors. For example, there are five or six pieces of rulings within the FOIA documentation that allows for continuing withholding of files. The most cited one is B1, which covers national security. So if there's something in a 50-year-old file that can't be released, you know, they can just slap the B1 coding on it and you don't get to see it. And there are also what are called special access programs, or SAPs, which essentially is like the official term for something like a black project where, you know, it's not necessarily even known to exist by Congress and organizations like this. And so SAPs are, a good way in which material can, you know, stays behind closed doors. Because the thing is, with the Freedom of Information Act, you have to specifically be able to know what you're asking for. You know, it's no good writing to the FBI and saying, I want your files on Men in Black, you know, or on contactees, shall we say. Let's say the contactees. What you've got to do is provide the name of one of the contactees, like George Adamski, and preferably provide date of birth, date of death, a photocopy of a death certificate, or an obituary in a newspaper, and send all that in. You know, saying I want files on the 1950s contactees is not going to work. You have to be very specific. And of course, if you can't be specific, well, it's not the case that the agency won't necessarily release the material. They've got nothing to go on if you're just using random terms and words, you know.
Well, maybe they do, but that gives them an excuse.
Well, it may give them an excuse, but sometimes it actually is the legitimate truth. You know, if you work in the Freedom of Information Office and you get a letter from somebody who says, under the terms of the Freedom of Information Act, I demand you release your files on abductees. You know, how is that person necessarily going to know you're talking about alien abductees? How they're going to, and even if they are, how is that person in the FOIA office? Remember, the person is an employee of the FOIA office. They're not, you know, necessarily conversing with everything that's gone on. So how will they know you're talking about Betty and Barney Hill or Betty Andreasen or some other abductee? They won't. You know, you have to be really specific. So, you know, somebody might make the argument that, yeah, it's a convenient way of not releasing files, but these people are only human as well. They need specific information to allow them to search for a file.
So if I want to search for a file, I have to have as much specificity as possible. I have to virtually know something about the file, at least a fair amount of information about what might be contained in it, dates, times, all that other stuff, before they'll even be able to find it, if they'll find it and if they'll be able to release it.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the things. It's not enough just to say, you know, you can't be vague about this, because otherwise the search would go on forever, you know.
It's not that we can expect the government to be very efficient. They're too busy making Star Trek movies for trainees. And after they listen to this show, the NSA is going to be engaged in all sorts of discussions about what we were talking about, trying to put some kind of figure on it. I'm only kidding.
Well, you know, I think it's like I came back to earlier. There's clear evidence that the UFO community has been watched over the years, but it's done, as far as I can tell at least, you know, the best way to do it is in the open. You listen to radio shows, listen to podcasts, read books, because ufologists invariably talk about what they've uncovered. You know, you actually don't need to bug the telephone of a ufologist when that person has a monthly column or an online, you know, column at this site or that site, because you know, invariably the time comes when they write about what they found. So, you know, that's it's the easiest way of watching us, you know, to see what we put out there.
Okay, so you wrote this book about what they know, about the government secrets, the classified documents. Do you think now they've expanded their files about Nick Redfern?
No, I truthfully don't. You know, I mean, some authors might say, oh, yeah, they're watching me because they think it's going to increase their popularity or whatever, or the intrigue surrounding them. You know, I'm honest with you that I don't think so because, you know, I'm not some Gary McKinnon type breaking into computers. I'm not illegally, you know, leaking material. I'm using the Freedom of Information Act, you know, so I'm using stuff that the government is letting us see. You know, that's a completely different thing to somebody, you know, hacking systems or releasing classified materials to WikiLeaks or whatever, you know, which is totally different. So, no, you know, it's like if you're using what the government's letting you see, they might be interested in knowing what you do with it, but at the end of the day, you're still using stuff that is legally freely available.
The book is called Monster Files: A Look Inside Government Secrets and Classified Documents on Bizarre Creatures and Extraordinary Animals, and I am none of the above, nor am I a bizarre secret or classified secret. Nick Redfern, tell our listeners, please, how they can get a hold of you or check out your stuff.
People can reach me at nickredfern14, F-O-R-T-E-A-N, .blogspot.com, or they can reach me at Facebook. Books available on Amazon, or stroll into Barnes & Noble and pick it up off the shelves.
How about that? Chris O'Brien, where can we find you? I've got to know.
Our strange planet. You know, we live on a strange planet. It's ourstrangeplanet.com.
And you find us at theparacast.com. We are also known as The Paracast on Twitter, greatly expanding the number of followers. We are also running a Paracast fan club on Facebook. Two of them. Someday we'll merge them into one, but probably not in our lifetimes. Nick Redfern, thanks for joining us this week on The Paracast.
All right, thanks, guys.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
To thank you for being a loyal listener, we have a limited-time freebie offer for you. Claim your free heirloom tomato seeds, just pay shipping, right now at 123freeseeds.com. These aren't ordinary seeds. These are heirloom, non-genetically modified super seeds that are open-pollinated and can be grown, harvested, and replanted endlessly. These survival seeds are actually more valuable than gold in a crisis. Go to 123freeseeds.com and you can get an airtight storage packet of 150 super seeds free while supplies last to say thank you for being a loyal listener. First come, first served. Just cover shipping. Go to 123freeseeds.com now to see if your free heirloom seeds are still available. That's 123freeseeds.com.